Can someone bring me the first canto of Bhagavatam? Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Takshurimiritam Jainatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jainabhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narotamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudirayet Nasta Preyasha Badrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatu Tamasloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinataranam Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinataranam Hare Krishna Dai Sri La Prabhupada Ki. So it is it is my pleasure and an honor to be here this morning. My first visit actually to this temple. I was observing a few minutes ago how it is the first temple in North America where I have seen the deities of Radha and Krishna along with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're probably in quite a few places in India, but outside of India we find them very rarely. This is, of course, replica or what we find in Sridham Mayapur. And what Srila Prabhupada also, the deities that he installed in Calcutta. We have them in a few other temples, but they're still relatively rare. Lord Chaitanya standing beside Radha and Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being actually non-different than Radha and Krishna. So this morning we're having, I guess, a regular Bhagavatam class now as part of another program, small fire sacrifice, where one of our devotees will be officially receiving initiation this morning. And therefore, after the Bhagavatam class, we'll be giving the name to the candidate, Srikanta Prabhu, and then we will proceed with the fire jagya, which will take us to approximately, I don't know, 11 o'clock or so. That's the right time, 9:05 right now. Yeah, okay. So we will be reading from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, one very well-known, often quoted verse, which is very much giving us the essence of what the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about, and also naturally giving us the essence of what initiation is all about as well. Diksha, or initiation ceremony, is a very important part of our practice and progress in devotional service. There are nine limbs or nine we could say levels, beginning, I'm sure many of you have heard classes or seminars are given on this topic. I believe Jayadvaita Maharaj specializes, possibly a few others also, from Shraddha to Prema. So there's a whole process, actually. All of us who have come to Krishna consciousness, or who are possibly just recently coming to Krishna consciousness, need to know these different levels, and we are meant to gradually rise from one lower level to the higher level. All that we practice in Krishna consciousness is based on science, actually, the highest of all sciences. It is called the science of bhakti, or the science of devotional service. The science is actually very, very great science, because not only does this science of bhakti encompass the spiritual dimension of life, but what is often forgotten, or maybe less known, probably more so in Kali Yuga, is how this science of bhakti is also meant and does cover as well this the material dimension of life. That's a whole topic in itself. And let's see if we can touch on this a little bit this morning. The text I have chosen is from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of my favorite, probably not only myself, but one of the very important chapters, chapter 2, which is entitled Divinity and Divine Service. It's probably a favorite of many devotees. In that chapter, just like Srila Prabhupada, he mentions that I have actually given everything in the first canto. Because as we know, when Srila Prabhupada undertook this Herculean task of translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, which goes for, 18,000 verses and 12 cantos, not knowing that he would be able to actually finish this translation, he purposely condensed the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I believe some years back, we were distributing, I think, in large quantities, the first canto of the Bhagavatam, because although it is one of 12, it is very complete in that it contains the essence of the Bhagavatam, and one is not missing out, so to speak, by hearing the first canto and especially the various purports given by Srila Prabhupada. So this is text number 6 from the second chapter. Most of our devotees know this one by heart, so it will not be difficult for everyone to repeat. So everyone can just repeat after me. Sa vai pum sam paro dharmo yata bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahaituki pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahaituki pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahaituki pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhakti ratho saje ahai tukiya pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhakti ratho saje ahai tukiya pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pum samparo dharmo to bhakti ratokshaje ahaitukiya pratihata yayatma suprasidati savai pum samparo dharmo Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahai tukiya pratihata
yayatma suprasidati
saha that by certainly pum sam for mankind paraha sublime dharmaha occupation yataha by which bhaktihi devotional service adhokshaje unto the transcendence ahaituki causeless apratihata unbroken yaya, by which atma, the self, suprasidati, completely satisfied. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.
The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to devotional, to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Kindly repeat after me. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity, is that by which, men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. In this statement, Sri Suta Goswami answers the first question of the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages ask him to summarize the whole range of revealed scriptures and present the most essential part so that fallen people or the people in general might easily take it up. The Vedas prescribe two different types of occupation for the human being. One is called the Pravritti Marga, or the path of sense enjoyment, and the other is called the Nivritti Marga, or the path of renunciation. The path of enjoyment is inferior, and the path of sacrifice for the Supreme Cause is superior. The material existence of the living being is a disease condition of actual life. Actual life is spiritual existence or Brahma-Bhuta existence, where life is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. Material existence is temporary, illusory, and full of miseries. There is no happiness at all. There is just the futile attempt to get rid of the miseries, and temporary cessation of misery is falsely called happiness. Therefore, the path of progressive material enjoyment, which is temporary, miserable, and illusory, is inferior. But devotional service to the Supreme Lord, which leads one to eternal, blissful, and all-cognizant life, is called the superior quality of occupation. This is sometimes polluted when mixed with the inferior quality. For example, adoption of devotional service for material gain is certainly an obstruction to the progressive path of renunciation. Renunciation or abnegation for ultimate goal, for ultimate good, is certainly a better occupation than enjoyment in the disease condition of life. Such enjoyment only aggravates the symptoms of disease and increases its duration. Therefore, devotional service to the Lord must be pure in quality, that is, without the least desire for material enjoyment. One should therefore accept the superior quality of occupation in the form of the devotional service of the Lord without any tinge of unnecessary desire, furtive action, and philosophical speculation. This alone can lead one to perpetual solace in his service. We have purposely denoted dharma as occupation because the root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains one's existence. A living being's sustenance of existence is to coordinate his activities with his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Krishna is the central pivot of living beings, and he is the all-attractive living entity or eternal form amongst all other living beings or eternal forms. Each and every living being has his eternal form in the spiritual existence, and Krishna is the eternal attraction for all of them. Krishna is the complete whole, and everything else is his part and parcel. The relation is one of the servant and the served. It is transcendental and is completely distinct from our experience in material existence. This relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. One can realize it as devotional service progresses. Everyone should engage himself in that transcendental loving service of the Lord, even in the present conditional state of material existence. That will gradually give one the clue to actual life and please him to complete satisfaction. Savai pumsham paro dharmo jato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma supraseedati. Translation again. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So as we were mentioning a few minutes ago, the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavatam, which are also the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, are centered on the science of bhakti, or devotional service. All of us here in the material world in different species of life, we are suffering due to our having become disconnected with this natural activity of bhakti or devotional service. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that it is after a very long period of time, bahunam janmanam ante After many births, if one is fortunate, one will come in contact with this process of bhakti, of devotional service. Bhakti, as we learn from both, especially Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, is the only means by which one can actually become delivered from this material world. And it is described here as the param dharma, the most superior or the highest occupation. Dharma is translated under different names. Here it is translated as occupation. Sometimes it is translated as duty. Sometimes it is translated as quality. What is the natural quality Prabhupada would give that example. Everything has its quality. Everything has a natural, we could say, nature. Similarly, living entity has its, or his, natural quality, which in the beginning is more easily understood in terms of duty, and is also understood in terms of occupation. This duty and occupation, dharma is actually a very, very important term. If we understand actually the meaning of dharma in all its different levels, then we can take up to the process which is being explained here, the process of bhakti. Dharma, a little bit like atma. Atma, Srila Prabhupada explains, also means different things. Atma, the lower level of atma, is referring to the body. And then gradually as we rise to the mind, and ultimately the highest is the soul. So, dharma is meant to be something that those who are fortunate to come in contact with the term dharma are meant to meditate on its meaning and significance. Because it addresses what is the most important, what is the most important thing in our life. Just like in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, in many other places actually in the Bhagavatam, the word dharma is referred to. So, in one conversation between Narada Muni and Yudhishthira Maharaj, where Yudhishthira Maharaj was anxious to understand more deeply about, specifically he wanted to understand about Varnasrama Dharma, which is one aspect of Dharma, Narada Muni nicely began by explaining about dharma. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan. The root of dharma, the root of dharma is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan or Krishna. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan sarva veda mayo harihi. All of the Vedic literatures point to that same direction. The essence of all the teachings of the Vedic literatures is to Hari, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Smritam cha tadvidam rajan. Smritam cha. There it is explaining, Narada Muni explains that those who are devotees of the Lord, they constantly endeavor to deepen their understanding of Dharma, and they constantly endeavor to progress in the path of devotion. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan sarva veda mayo harihi smritam cha tadvidam rajan. And what is the result? Yena chatma prasidati. Just like in this verse. Savaipum sam paro dharmo jato bhakti radhokshati. Ahaituki pratihata yayatma suprasidati. The same result, same goal or same purpose will be there. That the Atma means body, mind, intelligence, soul, everything will actually be automatically satisfied. So, in one verse, I believe in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada speaks about bhakti, how bhakti can be understood in four divisions. Bhakti can be understood in four divisions. The first three being connected with, Prabhupada explains, actually the first three being connected with the modes of material nature. And the fourth one being connected with transcendence. Actually, I just came across this verse a few months ago, where very interestingly, Srila Prabhupada explains how on the lower level, or on the material level of this body, we are meant to also practice bhakti. Means that even when one is under the influence of the modes of material nature, that verse is there in the Bhagavatam also. Akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradi trivena bhakti yogena. Whether one has all kinds of material desires, whether one has no material desire, or whether one has desire for mukti or liberation, one should take up to the process of bhakti. That is why we have in the beginning what is called sadhana, sadhana bhakti. It means that actually nothing, that is the special feature, we could say, of our Vedic culture. In our Vedic culture, Vedic teachings, everything that is material is meant to be dovetailed or utilized in Krishna's service, you see. That is why the system of Krishna has not only given us this science of bhakti on the higher level, the science of devotional service, which is ultimately the science, as Prabhupada mentions here, the science of relation or relationship. Every single living entity ultimately is searching out that perfect relationship which will make him or her happy. So bhakti in its higher level, or dharma rather, in its higher level, is explaining to us this very deep science of our eternal loving relationship with Krishna. That is called the science of rasa, the science of rasa, which is nicely referred to and explained in the Nectar of Devotion by Srila Rupa Goswami, the science of spiritual relationship. So that is one level of dharma, which is actually, of course, referred to here. That is the param dharma, the highest expression of love is on that transcendental platform, expressed in different relationships. What we often are not knowing or understanding is that there is another science, which is on a lower level, which is actually meant to help us attain and become connected with this higher science or higher level of bhakti. And when Srila Prabhupada, or when the Bhagavatam actually explains about yena chatma prasidati, then we need to understand that as conditioned living entities in the material world, we need to recognize both of these levels. We need to recognize the level of the spirit soul who has a natural position, natural identity, eternal identity in the beginning level as a servant of Krishna, jivair swarup hoy krishner nitya das. But even beyond that, Prabhupada is giving some reference in the Bhagavatam. As one progresses on the path of bhakti, then one's eternal identity in the spiritual world actually becomes known or becomes revealed. But that is a much higher level, much more advanced level. What is important to understand is that not only we have this level of Atma that we need to look after, not only are guidelines given on this level of Atma, but guidelines are also given on the lower level. That is the, just like we hear of Nectar Devotion actually is speaking about the complete science of bhakti. And that's the higher level. Bhagavatam speaks also about this other complete science, which is in connection with, also speaks about our occupation. In other words, there are desirable occupations in the material world which will be more conducive to our practicing of bhakti. I'd just like to speak on this a little bit because it will maybe serve as an introduction to a short seminar we'll be having later on this morning. And both are addressing the topic of duty or responsibility. Means we have simultaneously both a spiritual responsibility in terms of addressing the needs or serving the needs of the spirit soul, and simultaneously we have material responsibility in terms of not neglecting this material body and the various energies that we have to deal with while we are here in the material world. So both are actually meant to compensate, not compensate, complement. Both are actually meant to complement one another. And in modern day society, we generally are less familiar or understand less. Actually, in modern day society, we understand less about both levels, generally speaking. Most people are unaware that on the spiritual transcendental platform, we have an identity as a spirit soul. We have certain responsibilities, certain duties, certain activities on the purely transcendental platform. The duties and responsibility of the spirit soul. And secondly, most people also do not understand that Krishna, in his wisdom, has also arranged that we are meant to live in a particular manner in this material world, which will be more conducive. In other words, dharma needs to be understood on two levels, primarily. On the level of the spirit soul and on the level of this material body and various duties or occupations that we are meant to take up while we are here in the material world. This second level, lower level, is what Narada Muni speaks about quite extensively in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavatam. That is the level of what is called Varnashrama Dharma. So, this morning we were mentioning we are having this special ceremony of initiation, whereby it's something actually very special because one is getting an opportunity to actually become more formally connected with this whole science of Dharma, especially in terms of taking up in a formal way the chanting of the holy name, but also in terms of understanding more deeply about the whole realm of Dharma. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is especially referring to the higher level, let's say, the science of relationships which one can begin to understand as one progresses in devotional service. Just like Ado Sraddha, when one develops sufficient faith in the process of devotional service, then one will associate more closely with the devotees, with the Lord. By associating with the devotees, one will begin to follow and practice what the devotees of the Lord are practicing, especially by taking up this chanting of the holy name. Of all the practices which are recommended, the chanting is by far the most important and most powerful process which can actually protect the living entity from the influences, various influences of Maya in this material world. So initiation is actually a very important level that one should aspire to come to. It is an activity that one takes up, the activity of accepting formal initiation on the third level, that is called bhajana. Ado sraddha tato sadhu sangha bhajana kriya. When one practices, takes up the practice of bhakti or devotional service, one is meant to become situated in the mode of goodness. Practicing of devotional service will gradually bring one to the level of sattaguna. Means, Prabhupada explains, sattaguna is that level where one is able to follow nicely the prescribed rules and regulations. One who is, in other words, just like the foundation of dharma, that's also nicely explained in the first canto, is found in four basic qualities which we are all meant to develop, beginning with satyam. Satyam, daya, tapasocham. These are the pillars of dharma. These pillars of dharma can be more easily realized, or will actually become manifest, when one follows these four rules and regulations. So Prabhupada explains that by following these four rules and regulations, one becomes situated in the mode of goodness. That's a preliminary, we could say, requisite for someone to accept initiation. If one is still heavily influenced by the lower modes of material nature, rajagun and tamagun, then one, it means that one is not actually ready for initiation. Initiation is that opportunity given by a spiritual master to nicely engage in activities of bhakti or devotional service. The Bhagavatam explains that unless one is on the level of goodness, unless one's mind is peaceful. Mode of goodness means that one has attained the stage of prasanna. One is peaceful in mind. Evam prasanna manaso, Bhagavatam explains. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata. Only on the level of peaceful mind can one nicely practice or take up the process of devotional service, you see. So that is why Srila Prabhupada and, of course, our whole Guru Parampara has introduced these regulations, following these basic principles whereby one will actually become qualified to take formal initiation, by which one will be able to nicely practice devotional service. Devotional service cannot be so easily practiced when one is heavily influenced by the mode of passion or by the mode of ignorance. When one is able to thus practice nicely this Bhagavad Bhakti, then one will actually be able to make further progress on the path of devotional service. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata, then bhagavat tattva vijnanam. We see actually in these verses which explain the natural progress how very scientific is the process of devotional service. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam means that as one nicely puts into practice devotional service, Krishna being pleased by such devotional practice, Krishna being pleased by the activities of the devotee, by his consciousness as well, because one must practice bhakti, as Krishna explains, with love and devotion. Krishna is especially attracted or interested to the level of bhakti or devotion that one is actually displaying when practicing devotional service. So when Krishna sees the quality of service being practiced by his devotee, then Krishna begins to reciprocate. That reciprocation can be actually experienced, can be understood by the devotee. So this Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam means that Krishna helps to reveal more about this science of bhakti. Because by ourselves we cannot, although this knowledge, this eternal knowledge of dharma, this eternal knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, this eternal knowledge of our natural quality as servants of Krishna, it is actually there within the heart, but it becomes revealed only by the mercy of Krishna. So it means that a devotee, through all of his different activities, as he engages in devotional service, is attracting the mercy of Krishna. We are meant to attract that mercy of Krishna, without which Krishna will not reveal himself within our hearts. So, in the same way that one needs to rise to the mode of goodness, one needs to have one's mind situated primarily in the mode of goodness in order to nicely practice bhakti or devotional service. So that's on this higher level of bhakti. It is also important that how we engage ourselves in material life should also be more conducive for our practicing bhakti. So that is why Srila Prabhupada would remind us of how our Vedic culture gives a lot of importance, emphasizes the need to simplify our lives, you see. The need to minimize our different material necessities. In other words, the need to not regard, as we are doing in modern day society, economic development as the primary and most important goal in life. So Vedic culture is therefore on two levels, on two accounts, or in two ways, two major ways, inviting us or inducing us to live in a particular way. On the higher level, to practice this science of bhakti, which is which is explained beginning with Sravanam, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, the nine devotional activities, all of which are very, very powerful, either one of which can, if practiced nicely, can actually liberate one from this material world. Of course, the two most important of these activities are explained by our acharyas as hearing on a regular basis, and also chanting or speaking or revealing, sharing with others this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Sravanam, kirtanam, the very activities that these two great personalities, Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, were engaged in. The whole Bhagavatam is an exchange between these two great personalities. So in the same way that unless we are situated in the mode of goodness, unless we are peaceful in mind, it is difficult for us to nicely execute the process of devotional service. And without executing nicely the process of devotional service, then Krishna will not be so inclined to reciprocate, you see. As one reciprocates with Krishna, with love and devotion, Krishna reciprocates with that living entity, and one in this way progresses. So, a modern-day lifestyle is actually not conducive for practicing either of these. Modern-day ideology is, practically speaking, negating the whole spiritual dimension, isn't it? The whole identity, the very spiritual identity that we are, number one. And modern-day civilization is also not at all encouraging us to live a simplified lifestyle. And we have become so caught up in this material modern lifestyle, especially in what we call developed countries like America, that we tend to not even think about it, because we have, most of us who have been raised in this modern civilization with all of its modern facilities for material well-being, all kinds of machines which we are using and depending on more and more. We hear about, if we're devotees, we'll hear about it. If we're not devotees, very often we'll not even hear about this more simplified lifestyle. So Vedic culture gives a lot of emphasis and importance to this simplified way of living, which to a large extent we have practically totally forgotten in modern day life. And therefore, how the very way that we are living, which is very highly connected with the mode of passion, especially the mode of passion, makes it very, very difficult for people in general. Even it makes it difficult for those who are devotees to actually make tangible advancement in spiritual life. Not only do we have a duty and responsibility to develop our spiritual nature, or to live as spirit souls, as servants of Krishna, we also have a duty and responsibility to understand and also to revive this more simplified way of living, which is a major challenge, actually, in modern-day society. It is a major challenge, especially for those who are accustomed to living in the urban way of life, you see. Not that it is impossible, but it is a major challenge. What we often are less aware of, even as devotees, it's amazing, actually. Even as devotees, we, of course, we are more understanding that, yes, bhakti, devotional service, is meant to be our primary activity. And very often the question comes, but I'm not living in the temple, I'm working, and I have a job, I have so many duties and responsibilities, and how do I practice my bhakti, you know, within that system or that arrangement? So, of course, we generally, as Srila Prabhupada would explain, encourage everyone, whatever our material condition may be, we try to dovetail those activities in the service of Krishna. We offer the results of our activities to the Lord, and we try to give as much time as possible every single day before taking up our different material occupations or professions. We try to give some time to hear about the Bhagavatam or to chant the holy name, some devotional practice we perform, which is, of course, very important, which is good, which will help us in our practice of devotional service. But there's a need to go beyond that. There's a need to know that actually Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas as well wanted us to understand as Vaishnavas, as devotees, that we have a dual responsibility. We have a dual duty to perform in terms of our spiritual development, purely spiritual development of bhakti through these nine processes of devotional service, as mentioned earlier, beginning with sravanam, kirtanam, like this, up to atmanivedanam. That is one level. But we also have a duty and responsibility to bring about some changes, to begin with, in our own personal lives, and also in the lives of others and in society in general, whereby this mode of life which is advocated in the Vedic culture. Vedic culture advocates a very, very simplified lifestyle, which is especially appreciated and understood within primarily what is called an agrarian-based culture. Now, we don't often speak about that in detail. But there's a need to actually begin addressing this dimension of what our Krishna consciousness movement is about. Srila Prabhupada, many years ago, he made many profound statements, as we know. Anyone who reads Srila Prabhupada's books will come across or hears different conversations or reads letters written by Srila Prabhupada, comes across very, very profound, very important statements that Srila Prabhupada made, all of which are actually meant to help us awaken ourselves to, I would say, the different levels or the different dimensions of dharma. So Prabhupada made the following statement, that one of the important purposes of our Krishna consciousness movement is to bring about a complete overhaul in society and to revert to the traditional Vedic lifestyle or culture. We have very, very significantly, very severely deviated actually from that norm. In other words, one of the important points to understand is that as devotees, anyone who's been practicing Krishna consciousness for some time, we understand how it is for our benefit, for our good, to be practicing bhakti, to be chanting the holy name, to be taking Krishna prasadam, to be taking darshan of the Lord every day. All of these different practices nourishes the soul. That we understand. We understand to some extent more easily because that is generally the emphasis that is given, which is very good, which is necessary, and which needs to be continued. But we also need to understand that how we conduct our lives, how we live, how we utilize the God-given energies, Krishna's nature, Mother Nature, how she is utilized, or rather in modern day society, how she is being abused in so many ways, needs to be a concern to us as well, you see. Not only is Krishna to be remembered and to be worshipped and to be glorified in his original transcendental form of Shyamasundara, who is eternally enjoying all kinds of wonderful pastimes in the spiritual world, but also what is important for us as devotees, we should also be concerned about Krishna's Krishna's other energy, Krishna's external energy of this material world, which is described actually as Daivyesha Gunamayi, as his divine energy, and which is meant to be utilized in a particular way for the service of Krishna, you see. in the same way that this body, although it is material, we know that as devotees, we should properly take care of it. We should it should be cleansed every day, both internally, externally. We should utilize this body in so many different ways in the service of the Lord. So, expanding on this idea, we should also know that we have a responsibility as devotees to see how Krishna's energy, or to see how other living entities in this material world are being, we could say, treated or regarded. This is also very much part of dharma. And so in this way, especially when somebody becomes initiated, becoming initiated means becoming more committed to spiritual life, becoming more committed to the whole concept and principles of dharma. Krishna, he descends in this material world, one of the primary reasons, to reestablish the principles of dharma. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. When there is when there is destruction of dharma, when dharma is not being followed properly, so at different times Krishna comes to reestablish dharma samstapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So anyone who is a devotee of Krishna, anyone who is a follower of Krishna inherits. We also share that same duty. Krishna comes for a particular purpose, for a particular mission in this material world, which is, of course, primarily to teach us about this higher realm of dharma. This higher realm of dharma being that we are eternal spirit souls. But Krishna also teaches about the lower realm of dharma, that how we should live in this material world, how we should utilize his energy, how we should give protection. Bhagavatam identifies six living entities, all of whom need special, and that word is used, they need special attention, special care, special protection. And those are identified as brahmanas, women, children, those who are elderly in society, the diseased, and also the cows. These living entities in these different bodies are especially, why do they need so much of special attention? Because primarily they are very dependent on others. By nature, women are meant to be dependent. Women are meant to be dependent. Children are dependent. Those who are elderly are also dependent on the care of others, those who are diseased, and also the cows and the brahmanas or saintly persons. Saintly persons are described as being like, especially those who are, let's say, sadhus, they're like children as well. And they need to be maintained by society. So dharma is, as we mentioned before, is actually something that each and every devotee should be meditating upon. We should be trying to deepen our understanding and our appreciation of what is dharma. We should be living every single day following the basic principles of dharma. And one of the verses in the Bhagavatam explains nicely how the way we are living our lives, the way we lead our lives will be an indication of how we actually understand dharma. In other words, if we know that we are meant to be eternal servants of Krishna, if we know that we are devotees, then the more we practice as devotees, it means the more we understand that we are devotees of Krishna. If we are every day engaged in different devotional activities, this is a sign that we are devotees. So in a similar way, the more we understand these principles, or this particular principle of simplifying one's life, and we are having a responsibility or duty, we are duty bound as devotees to also address or understand this other dimension, I guess we could call it material dimension of life within our Krishna consciousness, of course, because of the teachings that are there in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever material thing may be there, whatever material activity may be there, if we dovetail those activities in the service of Krishna, then they are no longer material. That is why for a devotee who understands actually the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, there is actually nothing actually material when it becomes connected with Krishna. That is why Srila Prabhupada, he spoke about, in the context of Varnashram, he spoke about Daivi Varnashrama. Means one takes up material duties, material activities, but he offers or performs those activities for the pleasure and the satisfaction of Krishna. So both of these are actually very deep sciences. Narada Muni is one of our acharyas, Mahajans, and he is a very important personality. We have many acharyas, of course, whom we follow. Narada Muni is special in that he specializes in both of these levels of dharma. Narada Muni specializes in the science of bhakti, or what we call Bhagavat Dharma. And secondly, Narada Muni, he specializes in the science of Varnashrama Dharma as well. We've just touched a little bit actually when we begin to address either of these levels of dharma, because both of them are very complete sciences. Anything that is scientific actually is something that is very deep. And if we can begin to appreciate some aspect of these two sciences, then we can more easily progress and make advancement in spiritual life. So we are fortunate this morning in being able to participate. We will be having shortly our jagya ceremony, initiation ceremony. As we mentioned a little earlier, this is meant to take place as one advances or progresses in the practice of bhakti. When one becomes serious to apply or follow the four rules and regulations and become sufficiently situated in the mode of goodness, then one will be able to nicely, more easily practice devotional service. So we are getting this opportunity to attend this ceremony. For those of us who have already taken vows, one takes vows before this ceremony begins, the vow to continue following these basic principles. Human form of life is actually meant to take such vows, vows whereby we voluntarily agree to regulate our lives. So for those of us who have already taken these vows, this is a opportunity to remember these same vows that we have taken at the time of our initiation. And for those who are preparing themselves to take initiation, this can also be an incentive to become more serious, more prepared for one day taking up this very important step And for those who are still not knowing about initiation, then it's an opportunity to know that this is something very important. It's one of the levels that one should come to, that one should qualify. One formally becomes connected in Guru Parampara and is able to receive more mercy from Guru and from previous Acharyas. So it is a very special opportunity, not only for the person receiving initiation this morning, Srikant Prabhu, but also anyone who is fortunate to be present for this ceremony. Whenever we have initiation, we of course briefly remind ourselves, and especially the person or the devotees taking initiation, about offenses to be avoided, the most important of those offenses being Vaishnav Aparat, or offending other devotees. Our advancement in spiritual life is directly connected with offenses. Means if we make offenses, either voluntarily or involuntarily, then our advancement in spiritual life actually will be checked. I always take the opportunity to request each and every devotee who is attending, who is participating in such initiation ceremony, to also at least mentally offer your prayers of good wishes and prayers, so that the devotee taking this major step in spiritual life, taking these formal vows, can nicely progress and advance in spiritual life. Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada has nicely made such arrangement that by coming in contact with devotees, taking up the process, we become qualified to formally become members of this large spiritual family. Krishna has a very large family of unlimited numbers of devotees, majority of whom are already in the spiritual world. When we become devotees, then we become part of this family. Means that one day, by the Lord's mercy and by the mercy of the Lord's devotees, we may also one day become qualified to go back to the spiritual world. In the meantime, while we are here, we should try to deepen our understanding of what is Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada has given us a very big mandate, so to speak. We have, all of us, inherited a very large responsibility to take up personally in our own lives the process of devotional service. We have this great responsibility to deepen our understanding of what is dharma. There is a very great need. That need was actually there during Srila Prabhupada's times, some 40 years back, and still remains very much present today, to introduce this practice of Krishna consciousness very widely all over the world. So as we endeavor in our different ways, in our different centers around the world, to introduce Krishna consciousness, this is giving an opportunity to more and more people to come in contact with this process, and we should take advantage as much as possible and try to understand the order which is given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is a dual order, first and foremost, to begin by nicely practicing ourselves this process of Krishna consciousness. And as we become strong in Krishna consciousness, then our duty and responsibility is to somehow or other, according to our limited abilities, to try and present that to as many people as possible. Srila Prabhupada would often mention this particular order given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would especially bring this particular quotation when he would be having an audience of mostly Indian-bodied persons. But the order, so to speak, is not only for people from India. It is a standing order for anyone who is born in on this planet. Bharatvarsha, as Prabhupada explains, is not only the small piece of land that we know as India today, but Bharatvarsha actually is referring to this entire planet, which was governed by Maharaj Bharat many years ago. So, Bharat Bhumite Hoila Manusya Janamajar Janma Sartak Kori Kora Para Upakar. So, Janma Sartak Kori, we should make our lives successful by nicely, seriously taking up the process of devotional service to the point of actually becoming committed. Seriously means one becomes committed to the cause of Krishna consciousness, and that means committed to the point of understanding the need and the importance of taking formal initiation. That is number one. And then para upakar. Upakar means performing welfare activity. Para upakar, the highest welfare activity, the best way we can help both ourselves and others is by sharing or bringing as much as possible this transcendental knowledge, this transcendental process of devotional service. That was Srila Prabhupada's foremost goal, foremost mission, to introduce, as he has done so nicely. And all of us who have somehow or other come in contact with Krishna consciousness, we are indebted. We have this indebtedness. We should feel this indebtedness, actually, to Srila Prabhupada for having brought this knowledge, especially outside of India. And with great enthusiasm, we should try to do what we can for bringing this knowledge and this process of bhakti to as many people as possible. So I would like to stop here this morning before we begin our jagya. And we generally, after finishing Bhagavatam class, have a few minutes for any either clarification, questions, or comments on what we have heard. So if there is any question, we'll take maybe 5 minutes or something for that. If not, we can proceed directly to our ceremony. Okay, yeah.
Maharaj, in one of the lecture I heard, Prabhupada mentioned that there are 26 types of dharma or 26 categories of dharma, which is beginning with varnashrama. So would you please elaborate? Or clear?
There are, well, 26 qualities of devotees. 20 dharma shastras are there. 20 dharma shastras. Those are found especially in what is called the Shruti section of our Vedic literatures. Our Vedic knowledge is primarily divided into what is called Shruti and Smriti. Shruti is that section of the Vedas, the original four Vedas and Upanishads. These are directly spoken by the Supreme Lord, and they deal especially with the science, spiritual science of the soul. Whereas the Smriti section of the Vedic literatures contain various arts and sciences, material knowledge. These are written actually by self-realized souls, and they are, we could say, an expansion or an extension of the original teachings which are given by the Supreme Lord. And in these, they're called Dharma Shastras. There are all kinds of details of information which deal with how we are meant to utilize this material energy. So we find things like Ayurvedic, knowledge, or science of or knowledge of astrology, or Vastu Shastra, Dhanurveda, so many different kinds of writings which are meant to help those living entities in the material world deal with the material energy and properly utilize the various gifts of nature given by Krishna. So they are material sciences, and they were much more more well-known, more practiced previously. They are practically forgotten or very less known, especially in Kali Yuga. They have their importance, and especially in the context of Varnasrama, although they are secondary, you see, the whole level, this param dharma, this level of bhakti, is not conditioned, is not regulated by the lower level, but there is an intimate connection. Means the more we can follow these, the more we can properly apply these material sciences. For example, medicine, just one of many examples. Today we have what is called modern medicine, whereas in the Vedic literature it speaks about, let's say, Ayurvedic medicine. Medicine is, or medical treatment. Medical treatment is actually known in three levels. What is called daivik, then, which is the highest level, then manasik, and then asurik. And each one of them describe a particular form of treatment. And so our Vedic culture, Vedic knowledge, gives all kinds of information regarding especially the two higher levels of daivik, which is primarily with minerals, treating the science of proper utilization of minerals such as gold and silver and copper, etc. Those are very advanced. Kavirajas, they know this science, and they will treat very acute diseases this way. The general form of treatment is Ayurveda, which is using especially natural herbs, etc. And the lowest form of treatment, which is described in our shastras as asurik, is the kind of medicine that is practiced in modern times. So So there's all kinds of information, which when we begin to apply the process of varna and ashrama, become, I would say, more important to know, although it is practically impossible to revive those sciences as they existed previously. It's just like in the science of warfare was there, that by sound, isn't it? By mantra, kshatriyas, warriors of bygone days, would be able to infuse all kinds of powers that would. it's a science which is forgotten or unknown today. It's a material. These are material things, material either, you know, divided on the gross level or the subtle level. So there is reference. There are references to these shastras in the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada, and we have a challenge. It's part of our challenge to maybe extract or take what might be applicable, what we can apply to some extent in our present day situation, although it's highly unlikely that we can reintroduce as before, because so much of that knowledge is like not available nowadays, and was only possible to be practiced by people who were extremely highly qualified and who knew Sanskrit as well, and we just don't have as much access. Plus, a lot of this knowledge is not available actually in the shastras as well. Yes.
One of the questions, Maharaj, people ask is like, what sort of duties and occupations I adopt? I mean, Krishna says that you should follow a particular occupation, but what is my occupation or what's my natural occupation? People ask most of the time. So what's...
You're about to perform a yajna. I'm just. Well, occupations are on two levels. See, because dharma, the more we understand how dharma is on two levels, needs to be understood on two levels, we also have occupation on two levels. The higher level is in terms of general devotional activities, and as one rises or as one becomes purified, one will actually come to know, and this of course is much, much later level, one will come to know what is my actual duty in the spiritual world, what is my actual spiritual identity and my specific, very unique service to Krishna. So that's the higher level. The lower level is also very important to understand, and that has to do with varnas. So yes, very often devotees will ask, I don't know, Maharaj, can you explain to me what is my varna? So the idea is that when we are living in a more traditional, natural way, the varna is more easily and naturally understood. Because we're not doing that in the modern setup of things, it is more difficult. Still, it is possible, but it is more difficult to actually identify and follow our dharma, our varna, I'm sorry. So that is why Srila Prabhupada gave much importance to the need of living our lives in such a way that it will be closer to the Vedic, well, I was mentioning how the Vedic culture is agrarian based. So this is a particular paradigm which is very different from what we see and what we experience today. So within that more natural agrarian-based system, one's occupation, because in Vedic culture, occupations are also very simplified. Everything in the Vedic culture, we should know, is based on the quality of simplicity. And it is extremely difficult for most of us because we have been raised in complexity. You know, material life is very complex, very, very difficult. And you know, you take anybody from a city who's lived in his life, I mean, in the city most of his life, and you bring him in the country. Well, you know, within 1 hour, it's like he'll get bored. He won't know, you know, everything. Although there is immense variety in the country, you go to any place where there's, you know, some trees or grass and whatnot. So many varieties of trees, so many varieties of herbs, so many. But we're not trained. We don't know. So we see, all we see is green, isn't it? We just see green. With someone who knows, he will become attracted and understand. Oh, this is can be utilized for this purpose, for that purpose, etc., like that. So so to understand our, let's say, material occupation is more easily done, can be more easily taken up when we live a more, I would say, simplified lifestyle. And there are specific four guidelines given by Srila Prabhupada in order to help identify what is the varna, for example, of each individual. And basically means by astrological calculation, one gets some understanding. Then by studying our family heritage, which family we belong to, and then by administrating a psychological test, one can also get or gain a good understanding. And the fourth one is by observing the behavior by natural observation. That is how traditionally in villages the brahmanas, they would, by looking, observing, that would be generally between the ages of, let's say, 6 to 10. Between the ages of 6 to 10 is when the varna comes out in a more prominent way. The varna means the natural tendencies or natural qualities of an individual. And according to those natural inclinations, then one would be directed to some particular kind of education, which would be either formal education, which means Gurukula, or for the majority of people, it would be non-formal. It would be outside of the regular Gurukula system, and through apprenticeship, etc., like that, one would take up some particular occupation. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I had a question about a renunciation. We came across the use of that term.
Excellent.
In this text that you dealt with. And then Krishna also talks about renunciation in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna approaches him after he has addressed about Sankhya Yoga and Buddhi Yoga and pointed out that intelligence is better than fruitive activities. Arjuna says, I'm confused. And Krishna answers, and in that answer, one of the recommendations is that he does not advise as such renunciation. He uses that term.
Yes.
So what are we to take the meaning of the term renunciation as it comes up in our literature?
Yes. In the example of Arjuna, Krishna was advising Arjuna simultaneously to renounce and not to renounce. He was asking him not to renounce his duty as a kshatriya. You see, that you are a kshatriya, that is your varna, and therefore you should not renounce, you should not give up that duty and responsibility. However, you should renounce the results of that activity. You should, renunciation means that one should become totally surrendered to the order of Krishna without being without being attached to the results of those activities. That is actual renunciation. So that kind of renunciation is meant for everyone. All of us, we are meant to be, Krishna speaks of sannyas yoga. We should all be practicing this kind of renunciation. But we should not artificially renounce our material duties and responsibilities, which are clearly defined within the system of varna and ashrama. So therefore, Arjuna simultaneously was requested by Krishna to renounce, you know, because he was concerned about so many things will happen if I take up this war, to renounce all of these things, not to be preoccupied. But not to renounce his responsibility or duty as a warrior or as a kshatriya. So in that sense, renunciation has these two levels of meaning. And in that sense, we are all meant to become sannyasis. Because ultimately, sannyas means to become detached from this material world. To become detached from this material world means to become fully absorbed in activities of devotional service. So one who is actually such a devotee, as this verse is nicely describing, ahaituki apratihata, without material motivation and without interruption, such a person is actually a renunciate. Such a person. So one can be a renunciate even in family life, in that sense. And as a matter of fact, Srila Prabhupada sometimes, in referring to his householders, he would mention, you're already sannyasi. You're already renounced because you're fully absorbed in devotional activities. Yeah. So it is like an internal consciousness. Yeah. So we can possibly proceed. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Is there one form of the dharma or the meanings out of many of them is the personality or behavior of the person?
Whether one form or one aspect of dharma means the behavior?
Yeah, behavior or personality of the person. I mean, like how he acts and yes. How he has experienced, you know, observing or watching or going through.
Yes. One's behavior, yeah. One's activities are meant to reflect the principles of dharma. Yes. For example, if one is a devotee, then one's activities should demonstrate that he is a devotee. A devotee is somebody who thinks about the Lord, offers obeisances to the Lord, chants the holy name, takes darshan in a temple, so many activities. So the activities or the behavior is very sensitive to other people, is very compassionate to others. This all has to do with behavior. So the more one behaves nicely as a devotee, that means that he is that those activities are reflect his understanding of what it means to be a devotee. It means one is reflecting what are the qualities or the duties of dharma. It is directly connected with dharma. Yes. As a matter of fact, here it was talking about two activities, pravritti marga and nivritti marga. So nivritti marga means to actually reject all activities or things which are not in connection or not supporting dharma. Devotee is someone who specializes, so to speak, in understanding what is the proper way of doing, as opposed to someone who doesn't know, who doesn't follow dharma, and therefore doesn't behave properly. Yeah. Jai Granth Sarasvati Bhagavatam ki, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.